And the sun will come for us all.
Hey, Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I am so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc.
Not pod,
just podc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time, unless like
almost.
I'm on vacation or like I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals, G-A-L-S, at reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. You know, even if it's people you don't like and you don't like us, it doesn't hurt. Go ahead. Why not?
Yeah.
It still works.
Yeah.
And if you don't Thanks. Want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay. Thanks.
Rude.
Hello. I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
And today we're going to talk about if there's anyone out there. And I'll go into more detail in a minute. But Samantha, what are we drinking? What am I drinking?
Well, you are drinking because this was last minute and I did not have the ingredients. But you are drinking Interdimensional Smoke, which is a really cool name. It is 1.5 ounces Mezcal whiskey, 1 ounce coffee liqueur, 0.5 ounces cherry liqueur, and 1 ounce of cream. You're going to fill a cocktail shaker with ice cubes. Pour in the whiskey, coffee liqueur, cherry liqueur, and cream. Vigorously shake the mixture for about 15 seconds, allowing them all to blend together harmoniously. I like that word, so I had to say it. Strain the cocktail into a chilled glass, garnish with a cherry or a sprinkle of cocoa powder, and then enjoy the interdimensional journey that awaits with every sip, apparently.
So I did make it. It is pretty good. Of course, I changed the recipe because, well, I had, I actually used my favorite bourbon instead of whiskey or the whiskey that they said to use, which, I mean, that's fine. Use whatever bourbon or whiskey that you want. And I used the last of my coffee liqueur that I had, but I didn't have any cherry liqueur. So instead, I poured some maraschino cherry liquid and muddled some of the cherries at the bottom of my shaker and then put almond creamer in and I shook it up. I mean, it tastes good. So cheers.
Cheers.
Hopefully my dog calms down or you might just hear it the whole time. I don't know. This is a lot. I'm going to go ahead and tell you. I hope that you're ready. Originally, I wanted to cover the sixth dimension, but as I was like writing up notes to kind of do that, I realized that we probably don't have like a good grasp or a good understanding, like a baseline of the earlier dimensions, the lower dimensions. So that's first, second, third, and fourth dimension. So then I was just going to cover like 1 through 4. Maybe touch on the fifth dimension, but still, I didn't want to just do like sciencey stuff or like a lecture for you because I didn't think that would be, you know, entertaining. So I'm going to go in a like a slightly
if you're giving the lecture, it's bound to end up being entertaining regardless, but I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you guys how ovens work again. So on the second half of it, we're going to have a pretty interactive episode. And to kick it off, I do want to pose a question for our listeners. And I want to ask the question to you, Samantha, and Kelsey, because I want to know what your answers are to this. So I know we typically don't have Kelsey on the show that much, but I'm interested to see what your answers are going to be. So the first question that I have is, when you think about alien life, what is your first thought?
I mean, just in general, is that it's entirely not just possible, but probable. And I would be interested to see what the variations would be. But I don't think of green men with weirdly proportioned bodies and huge eyes and huge bulbous heads. I don't really think about that. I actually think closer to a different movie that I saw that was, it was something about they found life on Mars and they were Martians. And they basically looked just like humans, only slightly different because the gravitational pull is different. And that's how they explained it. And I'm like, that makes a lot more sense than completely different. It's like pretty similar, but just slight differences, which made sense to me. So that's kind of usually what I think of.
Kelsey?
My first, like, what pops into my head is an alien, like what you would see, like a gray or green guy, you know? But then the more I think about it, I'm like, well, odds are that aliens or other life forms are probably similar to us. And I think that absolutely they exist because the universe is too big and we are not that special that we can't be the only planet like us. That's how I feel.
Okay.
Don't break everybody's bubble.
Right.
We are.
Well, we're going to kind of get into that today.
Also, my second thought is Mars Attacks and those aliens, because that's just funny.
See, I think more about, like, especially since I read Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. He's the one who wrote the book The Martian, which is the movie with that one actor or whatever.
Matt Damon.
No way, that movie with that one actor.
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. The book is amazing.
The book is great. Project Hail Mary is, like, hands down, probably one of my top books. It's like a book that I reread every year. But in it, there is a first contact with an alien creature in it. And it doesn't take the form of, like, a human at all. It takes the form of, like, a rock spider, like a spider made of rocks. And it's because the environment of their planet is so different. They have a much higher gravity. They live in a lower oxygen, whatever. So they evolve to be different and they can't actually see. They move around with, like, so I think of, like, it could be anything. It could be a rock spider, or it could be like a photosynthesizing humanoid plant type creature, which is another one that came up when I was digging in this. So my second question to you is, when you think about why we haven't had direct contact from them, what's your first thought?
Because they drive by our planet and lock their doors as they continue to go.
That's a good answer.
I think they're aware of us. I think they're intentionally staying away, and I would too.
Okay.
I think it has to do with time dilation and the fact that, I'm not sure how to exactly to explain it, but basically, like, our planet, by the time other life forms were able to reach us, like, their communications reached us, maybe we weren't as evolved as we are now, or, like, vice versa. Like, I know we're sending out signals or whatever, but because of time dilation and how, you know, everything travels at different speeds. And,
yeah.
So I feel like we maybe haven't crossed that path where we're in the same evolutionary place that we can communicate, or something like, basically, they can't communicate with us because they are too advanced, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good answers, both of those. Truly. Because you're kind of hitting on, like, the theories that surround it without getting technical, obviously. So obviously, like, I'm not a physicist.
I try to keep, you know, when I talk astrophysics, I try to keep it on a lower level so the common person can understand.
Well, I appreciate that. And since this is not, like, we're not astrophysicists and we're not theoretical physicists, we're not as smart as the stuff that I'm going to be quoting from coming up. And I'm not going to have as, you know, much of a grasp on this topic as somebody in that position is going to have. So if you want to learn more about it, obviously there's links in my show notes. Neil deGrasse Tyson covers a lot of this stuff in Star Talk and also in The Cosmos, which, by the way, I don't think I've ever watched The Cosmos without being stoned out of my mind. So I don't remember any of it.
That it's was really good. I have watched
I'm sure it is really good. That's why I always want to watch it when I got high, but I don't get high anymore, so I need to rewatch it. Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff out there that you can go and watch and read and learn more about it. So if that's something that you're interested in, do it. A lot of this is going to be high level, and I'm not even going to scratch the surface of what we could potentially learn and what the theories are as to why we haven't made contact with an alien civilization. So, and also, as my husband so lovingly pointed out last night, I'm not great at explaining things. And if you're like, wow, that's really mean, I would like to also point back to the fact that I explained how ovens work in the AI episode. So he's not wrong.
No, your analogies sometimes leave something to be desired, but explaining things, I feel like you do a pretty good job. When you try to use analogies, I think that's where we get a little garbled.
Yeah, probably.
But the general idea is expressed and we figure it out.
Okay, good. Well, you know, my brain is a hot mess.
As long as you don't have to bake a turkey.
That's true. So like I said, I'm going to do my best to try and explain this in the best possible way on a higher level and not get into the nitty gritty, because you don't want to know what I think in my head when I'm thinking about this stuff. There's a lot of cheese also inserted in my brain, and I don't know why that's there. Okay.
No wonder you found all of those cheese jokes so funny at the comedy club that time.
Dude, the funniest stand-up I've ever seen in my entire life. It was hilarious.
It was not that funny. Your reaction was way funnier than the jokes.
I'm surprised I didn't get kicked out, honestly.
Well, he appreciated.
I'm sure he did.
Your appreciation.
That for listeners, we went to a comedy show and there was a guy who just came out on stage holding a pillow. I don't know why. And made cheese puns for like 15 minutes. Nobody laughed
awkwardly,
except for me.
Awkwardly made cheese puns the entire time.
And I loudly laughed. Like, disruptively, I was crying. Everybody was staring at me, but I was like crying, laughing. I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever heard.
The funniest thing was the first one that he does, and he does it deadpan, no expression on his face whatsoever. And he says it and pauses to give you an opportunity to react. And Montana's sitting there, and there's a pause. And then, or she covers up her mouth. Like, it was so loud. Nobody else made a sound except for her. And then that continued the rest of the bit. But anyway, it was hilarious. Our entire table was dying laughing because of her reaction. So we still enjoyed it, regardless. That's the point.
Well, I'm only here for entertainment, and that's why.
Well, not the only reason. Teach us stuff.
Back to the topic at hand. If the name didn't give it away, I'm going to cover two-ish theories on why we haven't made contact with extraterrestrial life. And I say two-ish because the second one is sort of like related to the first. They're all kind of like link into each other in a way. Are there reference within those theories and those hypotheses when they're talking about the other one? And they can kind of link up. And whenever you're researching this, a lot of them kind of do link up in some way. We're going to say two. It's more like three, you know. Again, they can't get the decade right on scientific papers. So I'm going to say three-ish. But I'm going to cover like my favorite ones, give you a little bit of background on the others, but not a lot. And we'll see what we think in the end. The first one we're going to go over is something called the dark forest hypothesis. Have you ever heard of this, Samantha?
It sounds vaguely familiar. So okay. I might have heard it in like a podcast or something in the past, but I don't remember it. So remind me.
Okay. Before I talk about the dark forest hypothesis, we need to cover some background on where it kind of like came from. And to do that, we need to talk about the Fermi paradox and about sci-fi novels.
Kelsey's face.
It's the whole thing.
Every new word that came out, she was like, what?
She's like, what? Oh, okay.
I'm along for the ride.
It just gives me a good opportunity to talk about sci-fi novels. I really enjoy too. So if you guys like sci-fi novels, make a little note and you can go and read those books. So before I nerd out about the novels, we're going to touch on the Fermi paradox. It's named after the Nobel Prize winning physicist Enrico Fermi. He's known to have supposedly made a throwaway comment during a casual lunchtime conversation back in the 50s that led to the Fermi paradox. And just a note, this is the part where I say they get the decade wrong, because in a lecture written up for the University of Oregon, it states that this lunch happened in the 40s, not the 50s. But every other paper says the 50s. So yeah, I don't know if that matters to you, but there it is. During this lunch, Enrico Fermi wondered, given that our planet was relatively young compared to the universe, we might have expected someone to have visited us by now, but we had no evidence of that ever occurring. This is the Fermi paradox. While Fermi did not get the opportunity to expand on this thought much after that conversation, he did die 4 years after it. The idea sparked entire fields of science hoping to solve the problem, including the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, which is SETI or SETI. It's a research organization or whatever. Got a lot of cool resources on the website if you ever want to go check it out. We're going to take a short detour out of the Fermi paradox, but we're going to come back. Don't worry. Really quick, I want to tell you about the Drake equation. The equation is named after Frank Drake, an astronomer from the 60s. He introduced a formula that can conceivably calculate the number of civilizations currently transmitting signals out of the Milky Way. The equation basically estimates that 12,500-ish intelligent alien civilizations may currently exist. Pairing that with the Fermi paradox makes it seem like, yeah, we should have made contact by now. So why haven't we? There are several posed solutions to the Fermi paradox. And I mean, it's a huge list of like solutions to this question. And that's the question of why we haven't been contacted or contacted an intelligent civilization. The most obvious being that human civilization just hasn't looked hard enough yet. The first planets beyond our own solar system were only discovered in the 1990s. There's actually a really cool interview between Neil deGrasse Tyson and another person, I couldn't find the lady's name, on Star Talk. And it's talking about the amount of space we've explored as humans. And this other person says, think of the ocean on Earth as the knowable space to explore. To make a comparison of how much we've explored, you'd need a 12-ounce glass of water. That's what we've explored. And if you just take 12 ounces from the ocean and you look at it, there's probably not going to be any fish in it, in that glass. But that's not to say that fish aren't out there. We just can't reach them yet. And I liked that comparison because it was a good like analogy or whatever that I can't come up with. So,
well, I mean, there are still fish in the ocean that we haven't identified and can't get to in our own ocean. So that's
true.
Even better analogy, in my opinion.
I think we should just stay out of the ocean. That place is scary.
There's a reason why we can't get to those fish. They're evil.
I don't want to get to them. Why are they there? Why are you hiding?
The further down you go, the more terrifying they get from everything I've seen. So I'm good.
That is so true. Oh, and they're so ugly sometimes. Like I said, there are several other proposed solutions to the Fermi paradox, and I would love to go into more detail, but again, we don't have like that amount of time. Like the ideas, and I'll just touch on a couple of them. The ideas that we are actually alone because the conditions for life are so rare, which is, that's sad and lonely. Hope that's not true. Or that we were late to the game and advanced civilizations have come and gone already. Kind of like what Kelsey said, time dilation, time whatever, you know, all of that other stuff. We evolved later in the game and everything has already been here and X-nayed. There's also another proposed solution or theory as to the Fermi paradox, and that is that we are a living zoo for an advanced civilization. This is fucking
Isn't that
terrifying.
A lovely thought?
Oh no. I
talk
don't
about taking
like
away
it.
That idea that we're special.
Yeah, I think that kind of plays into the whole like simulation sort of thing. And there is this other idea that, you know, once we start creating simulations of living creatures, we will have ascended to the next level of knowledge and existence and advancement and blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of crazy shit out there.
Sounds like a Rick and Morty episode.
Truly, it does. Where do you think they come up with the ideas for that? A lot of what's based in that show is based on our theories and understandings of how time, space, and, you know, scientific-y stuff is.
Well, I will say that on And That's Why We Drink, there was an episode where M covered some high-level astrophysics about a certain topic. I can't remember what the topic was, but they explained it really well, mm-hmm. some of these theories. And I think the Drake theory was mentioned in that one as well. But I think I kind of agree with them that it's, I think it's a combination of it has to be viable, you know, for life, but also the timing has to line up. And even in that situation, with both of those situations, there's still plenty of opportunity just statistically that there are other civilizations, because there's just such a high number statistically of likelihood that there are other forms of life out there that would be intelligent.
I agree. And that's just talking about like our own universe. So if you think about like how everything is set up, we've got our solar system, which is inside of a galaxy, which is inside of a universe full of tons of galaxies. And I came across one physicist who was talking about it, and he was like, if you really think about it, there probably wasn't just one Big Bang. Our Big Bang is within our universe. And that there are probably simultaneous Big Bangs that are going on creating other universes, which is just like, it's a constant like inception sort of like.
Basically, that's a good word for it. It kind of does feel like inception. Just keeps going and going and going and going.
Yeah. And you don't know what all of these universes are a part of on a bigger level either. So anyway, you kind of like slice space and time and all of that stuff, it really is just going to fuck you up and leave you sleepless at night, which is what it did to me last night. So now, while our lack of exploration is the most obvious reason why we've never made contact, there's another solution given to the Fermi paradox, and that's the dark forest hypothesis. And this is where I'm going to nerd out a bit, and I'm going to talk about some novels. And I know typically we wouldn't like reference novels, but there is a direct link from the novel, one of the novels I'm going to tell you about, to the dark forest theory or hypothesis. I've known about the dark forest hypothesis for years, and I just didn't realize that I knew it. I didn't realize that that's what that was. It will come like as no surprise that I'm a huge like sci-fi novel nerd. I can love that shit, eat it up all day long. And more specifically, ones involving first contact and like space operas and things like that are my favorite. The first book/series that I ever read that indirectly used the Dark Forest as like a plot point was a series called The Expanse. I know that they have like a show. It's either on Apple or Amazon. I don't remember which one it is. I tried watching the first season, fucking hated it. But I read this series. It's 9 books. I read this series at least twice a year. I just finished reading it too again, which
that
is crazy.
A little bit.
But basically, like, the premise of this book is that humans have expanded out into space, and they eventually come across this molecule or alien like matter that basically turns a bunch of humans into zombies, and it builds a machine that opens gateways into other other places within the universe. So you hundreds and hundreds of gates getting you across time and space into those other areas. But the problem that they end up facing is that when they're using these gates, it is disturbing something, and they don't know what it is. And instead of whatever that something is, that ominous something, instead of that thing turning off these gates, it's trying to eliminate the human race. So that was the first time I had ever come across it, but it didn't directly like talk about the Dark Forest. And while that like first series that I read introduced the idea to me, the first book I read that explicitly named it the Dark Forest Hypothesis was Liu Xin's, and I think I'm saying that right, novel, The Dark Forest, or it's the series, The Three Body Problem. I read this a couple years ago.
Don't they have a series out that just got released of that?
Yeah, there's a show out of it. Didn't know that
there
was a show.
I think it's on Netflix. I want to say I saw that the other day.
Yeah. Kind of want to watch that. I will say that the series, the books, they're hard to read. And not because it was translated or anything like that, but it's got very technical scientific stuff in it. And it's just, it's hard to grab. When you aren't in that field and you don't like study this stuff regularly, it is hard to like change kind of like your perspective of what is available to us in a scientific way, I guess. But this book, this series, is actually responsible for naming this hypothesis. While the hypothesis has been around for years, dating back to like the 80s, the idea of it, that book itself that came out in 2008 is actually the reason it's named The Dark Forest. And that's because in this series, humankind makes first contact with an alien species. The problem that happens is that, and sorry if I spoil this for anybody, but, you know, read that book. It's like number one New York Times best, like China's number one selling book series too.
Maybe go and stop. Go ahead and stop right now. Go read the book and then come back to this episode.
Yeah, go
if you don't
want
to be spoiled.
Series, then come back and we'll talk about it. But pretty much we make first contact with an alien civilization. But in doing so, in sending out a signal to another solar system and another civilization, we pinpoint where that solar system, that civilization is. And something bigger than us, something that we can't see, something that is inconceivable to us, targets that other civilization and blows up their sun.
That escalated quickly.
Yeah. So then there's more to that series, you know, whatever. It's really good. Go and like read it. But this is where the name came from. So the technical hypothesis is the conjecture that many alien civilizations exist throughout the universe, but they are both silent and hostile, maintaining their undetectability for fear of being destroyed by another hostile and undetected civilization.
So can I ask you something real quick?
Sure.
I'm going to get a little philosophical on this one.
Okay, I'm here for it. I need a drink break anyway.
Our thought processes around other beings from other planets or countries, but mm-hmm. in general, human race, when we think of beings from another planet, what we assume of them, of their behaviors, we assume because of our own
correct
responses to those specific situations. So when a book like this is written, all I can think is, The reason why we think that might be the case is because that's how we would act in the same, in a similar situation. If that was us and somebody contacted us, we would say, how can we take advantage of this and get rid of them? So it kind of says more about us than it does about anything else.
Yeah, all just, of this is.
Like I said, just getting a little philosophical, but that was just my first thought when I heard that.
You're not
I was like,
wrong.
Yep, that's totally what we would do if we had the opportunity.
Like our limitations of what we can hypothesize or we can theorize because we are limited by our own experience and our own capabilities. So,
well, and I think that's why there is a theory that aliens have seen us and they are aware of us and they aren't coming around because we are so destructive, self and otherwise, that they don't want to be involved in that. They don't think that they can help us. So why bother? We're just going to go back home and do our own thing.
Yeah.
Thanks, but no thanks.
You are correct. So the dark forest hypothesis presumes that any spacefaring civilization would view any other intelligent life as an inevitable threat and thus destroy any nascent life that makes itself known. As a result, the electromagnetic spectrum would be relatively quiet without evidence of any intelligent alien life. And that's why a lot of people are like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be sending out like radio signals. Like you wouldn't go up to a stranger and just give them your address. Why are we?
Well, and with us not having the technological advances, because if you think about it, if we're sending signals out and we're not aware of any other life forms, we're basically telling them, hey, we're just trying to see if there's anything out there. We obviously don't know that for sure. So we don't have the technology to even defend ourselves more than likely. Mm-hmm. Because we don't even have the technology to actually do a deep dive and find out for ourselves. We're asking you to tell us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is being very vulnerable in a way that may or may not be smart.
I agree. I'm calling up NASA tonight. I'm going to be like, hey, let's stop doing this. Not cool, my guys.
I mean, it could work out really great. We could get a benevolent alien come to this planet and help us out. It could also turn out the other way. So it's a 50-50 shot, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. So in the novel, The Dark Forest, it talks about the Dark Forest hypothesis as in a, quote, dark forest filled with armed hunters stalking through the trees like ghosts. Since the intention of any newly contacted civilization can never be known with certainty, meaning that if one is encountered, it is best to shoot first and ask questions later in order to avoid the potential extinction of one's own species.
I know, so that's how we handle it here in Alabama.
Hey, that's how we do it in the United States, baby. Oh, it shouldn't be like that. I'm not making a joke about it. I am just very upset about it. Anyways, another theory in the Fermi paradox is something called the Great Filter. Again, I don't have a great deal of time to go into the specifics of the Great Filter theory, so I'm going to like high level it as best as I can. And to do that, I need to tell you first about the Kardashev scale. I think that's how you say it. It's a method of measuring a civilization's level of technological advancement based on the amount of energy it is capable of harnessing and using. So if you think about like our civilization, we can harness energy, but we're limited to the amount and how much we can actually use. So they're basing the scale of what civilization is and what level they're on based on their ability to do that. So the Great Filter hypothesis is the idea that in the development of life from the earliest stages of embryogenesis, whatever, to reaching the highest levels of development on the Kardashev. Did I say that right, Kelsey? Kardashev?
I couldn't find a pronunciation for it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're just going to wing it here. Scale. There is a barrier to development that makes detectable extraterrestrial life exceedingly rare. Some speculate as to what the Great Filter might be is our own ability to overcome dimensions. So we're going to talk about dimensions, and this is where your piece of paper is going to come in handy. For those listening, if you don't have access to a piece of paper or you're driving, hope you can just imagine it in your head really well. So are we ready?
Sure.
I hope so. And I actually watched a kid talk, like explain this. My husband sent me a video of this kid explaining dimensions last night to me, and he does a really good job. And he has a Kinects to help explain, which my husband was like, I can break out my Kinects so you can do it. And I was like, dude, no, we're not doing this. I'm going to keep it simple and we're going to use paper. So when you think about dimensions, you kind of want to think about it as like layers or levels. The definition for dimensions is like, how are you measuring something? Like, is it lengthwise? Can you move back and forth? Can you move left, right? Can you move up and down? That is kind of high level what dimensions are. So you take your first piece of paper. You can hold it up flat in front of you. This is one dimension. You are able to move across it back and forth, but you cannot move up and down, and you cannot move forward and backward. You are only able to move side to side. Now, if you take a second piece of paper and you say, well, you know what? I'm going to put another one up here. So now you have two pieces of paper that are stacked. At this point, you can move side to side and up and down, correct? So that's two-dimensional. This is where we kind of get weird, because while you have a third one, the third dimension is a little bit different. It's less about stacking, and it's more about a cube. So at this point, when you draw, when you think about it when you're drawing, if you draw just a straight line, if you draw just a straight line, one dimension, if you turn it into a square, that square is two dimensions. But when you draw it in a cube, you add some lines in the back of it, you connect those lines, and you've made a cube. That's three dimensions. You're now able to move up, down, sideways, front, and back. That's what makes three dimensions. Now, we exist in a three, we exist understanding three dimensions. We see, we learn, we evolved in three-dimensional space. Hopefully people got that when we're recording it. It's like, oops.
I mean, the three dimension, it's what you learn in like geometry, right? Mm-hmm. Like how do you determine the area of something? And then if you have a cube, then you're going to add another layer of it. So it's a cube.
Correct.
By the time you get to the third dimension, basically. You have depth.
Yeah, you have depth. So our world is in three, or we understand our world in a three spatial dimensions with a fourth dimension that is temporal, as in like the dimension of time. So when we're measuring like up to three dimensions, again, like we said, it's width, depth, all of that other stuff. The idea for the fourth dimension is that we are including time as a measurement. This is a hotly debated topic, and I'm not going to like say that it is time or it's not. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. You can debate amongst yourselves if you believe it's time or if it's another measurement of a dimension that we cannot perceive or understand or even think of. Together, they form the fabric of space-time. Scientists and philosophers have wondered and performed research on what a fourth spatial dimension would be. Because these researchers can't directly observe a fourth dimension, it's all more difficult to find evidence of it. So while we can think and we can theorize that there is a fourth dimension, we cannot perceive it ourselves. We are incapable of perceiving a fourth dimension. One example of a four-dimensional object is something called a tesseract. And if you've read like Ready Player One, you've probably heard of the tesseract, because it's an object to use within the book. It's nerd stuff. But it's basically, it looks like a square with inside of another square. But if you turn it, it doesn't look like a square at all. It looks odd. Because we can't perceive what it is, and so we can't directly model it. This is an idea of what we think a fourth dimensional object would look like. Some people theorize that the fourth dimension allows you to see between and within matter. So like if I looked at you, I could just see like through you, through your like makeup, whatever.
That's going into, I don't know if you ever watched, I think you watched it, the one with the movie with Scarlett Johansson, Lucy, where she starts to be able to see through humans and all of that. Like, she begins to be able to access more and more of her brain. So, and the idea is, in theory, the more we can access of our brain, the more things we can do. And it kind of really goes out there. But that's one of the things that she ends up being able to do, is kind of like see through things.
Okay. Yeah. There's a really good depiction of what a four-dimensional like environment would look like in the movie Interstellar, when he's in the wall of books, four-dimensional plane. But again, we don't know, you know, if that's an actual, we can't, our brains can't comprehend what it would be. Cool little object you get to see. And so for the next part, I'm going to quote directly from an article on sciencing.com for this next part, simply because I didn't want to try and rewrite it. Had a lot of scientific-y words. Deal with it. And it has really good examples of like what a four-dimensional being might be. So, quote, what beings or life would look like in four dimensions has occupied scientists and other professionals for decades. Writer Robert Heinlein's 1940 short story, quote, "And he built a crooked house," unquote, involved creating a building in the shape of a tesseract. It involves an earthquake that shatters the four-dimensional house into an unfolded state of eight different cubes. Writer Cliff Pickover imagined four-dimensional beings, hyper beings, as, quote, "flesh-colored balloons constantly changing in size," unquote. Fucking horrifying. These beings would appear to you as disconnected pieces of flesh, the same way a two-dimensional world would only let you see cross-sections and remnants of three-dimensional ones. Yeah. The fourth-dimensional life form could see inside of you the same way a three-dimensional being can see a two-dimensional one from all angles and perspectives. You could describe the positions of these hyper-beings using four-dimensional coordinates such as 1111. John D. Norton of University of Pittsburgh's Department of History and Philosophy of Science explained that you can arrive at these conclusions on the nature of the fourth dimension by asking questions of what makes one, two, and three-dimensional objects and phenomena the way they are and extrapolating into a fourth dimension. A being that lived in the fourth dimension may have this sort of stereo vision, Norton described, to visualize four-dimensional images without being restrained by the three dimensions. Three-dimensional images that drift together and apart from one another in three dimensions show this limitation. So thinking about like, and that I'm done with that. So thinking about our dimensional plane, when we look at a two-dimensional object, it doesn't really have anything to do with us. Like, it doesn't matter in the end. If I create a little stick figure on a two-dimensional plane, he's wearing a baseball cap, right? When he takes that baseball, or when they take that baseball cap off, it comes off in the same direction that it's been put on. But if I were to directly interact with this, and I took their baseball cap, and I flipped it around and stuck it back on their head, and it's pointing with the bill the other way, that two-dimensional creature is probably going to flip the fuck out because it cannot perceive how its hat was able to turn around, because turnaround does not exist within its world. That makes sense? All right. So that's kind of how it is with us. We don't know what doesn't exist above us and what they are capable of doing in the three-dimensional world with four-dimensional whatever. I'm getting really technical. Yeah, with four-dimensional whatever. Oh, yikes. So the thought is that when you talk about like the great filter, and you kind of bring in, and these two do not directly correlate, but it's kind of like my thought process, and some people kind of speculate that this might be what that great filter is our ability to achieve understanding and use of a four-dimensional plane as that, you know, what is blocking us from moving on to greater civilization, blah, 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 blah. And if you think about like the way that we interact with two-dimensional whatever, we don't really care about that. So why would a fourth-dimensional being care or want to interact with us? So the thought is the reason we haven't made contact with other advanced civilizations is because they're in a dimension higher than us, and they don't really fucking care about us. Because what are they going to do? Turn our baseball caps backwards?
I mean, it sounds fun, but
it does sound fun.
Probably not.
But the reality at the end of all of it is that, while talking about like dimensions in kind of like interdimensional existence and all of that stuff is compelling, the fact that we don't have a single two-dimensional creature or civilization that we can interact with. So it's not provable that that is like a plane of existence. The only one we know for sure is three dimensions within a four-dimensional plane. And if you look into dimensions, it goes all the way up to 11 dimensions, and it's exhausting.
Yeah, Kelsey's face. I love that.
So, yeah, that's the thought process, is that, you know, there may be other intelligent creatures out there. We just can't interact with them. They could interact with us, but they don't care to. Bada bing, bada boom. What are your thoughts?
Makes sense to me, honestly. Like, just in general, that they just wouldn't care. I mean, what is to be gained on their side of this equation? Because let's say there is a being out there that can. They don't know what kind of mixed bag they're getting either. If they do try to contact us, like, how much trouble are we going to cause? And if they've been watching us for any length of time, we cause trouble. So they probably don't want to. So, I mean, is there anything to be gained of that? Probably not. So why bother spending the time? Let's do something else.
Yeah, true. Unless we want to cross over that threshold, we're going to unlock a different dimensional understanding within our brain juices. I don't know. I don't really know how you get over
brain
that.
Brain juices. That needs to be written down as one of the quotes from this episode.
So, yeah, I tried to high level that as much as possible, but I kind of like, that's my thought process when I think about like those specific things. The dark forest theory is like one of my favorite ones, only because it's a good trope within like science fiction novels, talking about like first contact and things like that. It's used a lot. But there are like over 20 hypotheses within the Fermi paradox. The zoo one's very interesting. I don't like that. I don't want to be a zoo. Anyway, that's it. At the end of the day, I don't know what it is. My thought is that, yeah, there probably are civilizations out there that are advanced. And I like this understanding of it, of like, they're out there. They're just not, it may not even be like dimensions that are different, that are higher. It could be something else that we just can't like, we can't conceive of what that is. That doesn't give us the ability to reach them. It doesn't even have to be time. It doesn't have to be space. It can be something else. The end.
Good job.
Thanks.
That was a lot of information, but it was very good. Fourth dimension, I can understand why the time aspect might be under debate. Because maybe time just affects us more so than it would another being. But time is such a big construct for us because our lives are passing. We only have so much time. So that's why it matters to us. And that's why it would be considered a dimension, is because it does matter to us. And that's how we live our life, because we have a finite amount of it. But I can also understand, because it's finite, that also doesn't make sense why that would be a dimension. So I can kind of understand where they're coming from. But I think that's a theoretical physicist's job, is to figure this stuff out. I was starting to think you were going into like string theory and all of that stuff.
No, didn't want to touch on that. I wanted to keep it like,
I'll go watch the Big Bang again from beginning to end. And then the end, Penny like figures it out for him, and he just sits there. But
No, good job. That was a lot. So I'm glad you did that, not me.
Hey,
I wouldn't have been able to.
I'm a nerd.
Kelsey, you were saying something.
I'm a big old nerd.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to say one thing about the baseball cap thing. That is what clicked it in for me as far as like the different, because you're right. Like, why would we want to interact with a dimension lower than us if all we can do is kind of like fuck with them and they don't understand what is happening, right? It reminds me sort of like the glitches in the Matrix that happen. You know, people tell stories about that kind of shit happening. And, you know, some people believe there is someone up there that's doing stuff to us or whatever. But either way, that kind of nailed it in like, oh, I get it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's not to say that somebody wouldn't do it. I mean, think about it. We have animals that don't have depth perception. So they basically see our world almost on a two-dimensional plane. People mess with them all the time. So take advantage of that. So I'm not going to say it's not possible, but I think the greater majority of us would not.
Well, and that's kind of the idea of like, maybe they have been fucking with us, and like all of those people who had like the weird experiences, that's what was happening, or that's where cryptids come from. You know, they come from a different dimensional plane, which
they're like, hey guys, watch this. Let's see what happens when we do this.
Different thing. But it's the idea that it's something that we can't conceptualize and we can't like process or think ourselves. So we just can't know. So, yeah, maybe they live in parallel with us. We just can't perceive them. Okay, now the end. Oh, man. That would have taken a nap now.
I want to take a nap, and I was just listening.
Yikes. No, what is it?
Until next time. We love you.
Okay. Until
you forgot.
Jesus. I forgot.
Oh, brain things.
Until next time, we love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye.
Don't look directly at a Tesseract. Bye. The Reaper.